Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the ratings for the television networks and stuff for the fall 2016 TV season so far. I love these episodes because I find them very informative, very entertaining, and most of all, Sam, I love that you do all the number crunching on these. You do a terrific job putting together the spreadsheet we're about to look through and stuff, and I really appreciate it because I've grown up in a household where both of my parents had worked in television over the years, and so talking about ratings and all of that kind of stuff is always been kind of a part of my life, but never to the point where I necessarily had a deep and understanding of these things to the level you do. So again, I find these episodes a lot of fun. I think right now it is an excellent time to be a geek. There is so much television for us. Where do you want to start? Where do you want to begin the discussion of how things are going?
Thank you. I don't know. Do we want to do a quick overview again? Because we only do this once or twice a year on what they are, what they aren't.
Yeah.
Want to kind of do disclaimers?
Good idea. Let's start with that.
First of all, the numbers I will be talking about are live plus same day ratings. The reason I use those, and no, they do not include people that watch them days later, weeks later, months later, or any time later past the initial, usually 6 hours of the evening, is the numbers that really matter, I guess, the commercial ratings, which is the number of people that watch the commercials in the first 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
While those are not nearly as widely available, when they do become available, they most mirror these numbers. The other thing we tend to notice is that the other numbers don't change statistically. As John and I talked about a little bit in the last comics episode, relative strength within your own network is much more important than kind of overall strength. Not that overall strength doesn't matter, but again, shows at the top, a network's best shows survive, a network's worst shows don't, and kind of their raw numbers not nearly as meaningful. And again, those numbers don't tend to change with time and distance and all those other things. And again, for ad sales, which is what really drives all this, these are the closest numbers we kind of have to look at those.
Mm-hmm. No, that all makes sense, particularly the relative strength within the network, because really the only thing the network executives can control is what's on their network. So even if it's doing way better than everybody else or not as good as everybody else, they've got, you know, hey, cut from the bottom and keep at the top in terms of what shows to hang on to or whatnot.
The ratings numbers we're going to be talking about are a percentage. Just so we know, we have an estimated 118.4 million U.S. households, representing about 301.7 million people over the age of two with access to some form of broadcast or cable television.
Surprised they go all the way down to the age of two. That seems a little younger than I might have cut off, but okay.
For children's programming, 2 to 5, 5 to 13.
Okay.
Those are some big numbers for certain. There are channels and executives and programmers that do care about those numbers, as are their advertisers.
Absolutely. If we were looking at more children's type programming versus primetime type programming, if we were looking at the PBS afternoon shows or stuff like that, totally. That you're right. That's an important demographic in those areas.
Under two, they don't check, even though there are networks now aimed at those demographics. But anyways, a rating number, when we list it, it will be a percentage. In other words, a one rating is 1% of that population. The numbers we look at are 18 to 49, only because they are kind of the ones advertisers care about. And so if I say a show got a one rating, it is 1% of people with a television ages 18 to 49. The other number we talk about a little bit is share. Share is a percentage of the people watching television at any given moment. So again, if you have, let's say, to make this easy, 10 people with televisions in their home, and there's only two shows on, and three people are watching one show, and two people are watching another show, and five people are out.
Mm-hmm.
The show that had three viewers would get a 60 rating. The show that had two viewers would get a 40 rating. I'm sorry. The show that had three viewers would get a 30 rating. Mm-hmm. Show that two viewers would get a 20 rating, but they would get a 60 and a 40 share.
Because the share is limited to how many are actually watching TV versus the rating is how many out of the possible people that could have been watching.
Exactly.
All right. So what we're going to see then is the share is always going to be higher than the rating, and that the amount by which depends on how many people were watching at that time. And what would be considered kind of the highest realistic rating that we're likely to see? I imagine, having just flipped through it, it's going to be around 3.38 or something for Big Bang Theory was the highest rated show.
For individual shows, yeah. For regular broadcast, football games can get in the 10s and 11s and 12s if they're good. The World Series drew some numbers in the middle teens, you know, your 13, 14s, 15s.
Event type stuff, though, that's in the moment. Yeah.
Super Bowls are be just under 50 usually, sometimes over. Again, that's, you know, usually talking somewhere in the 47 to 51 range. And something you asked about because of the year, we can talk about that. We actually do have something with a 47.6 rating.
Yeah, because it was an election year, I had asked you to look at how the three presidential debates did, and then kind of what was the sense of the coverage on election night? How many people were kind of glued to the TV there? And I found these kind of interesting because the first debate had that 47.6 rating you talked about. The second one had a 37.1, which was down about, you know, 10 or whatever, but then it bounced back up for that third debate of 41.7.
Yes. And let's remember the second debate was that the Sunday night debate? There was one that was on at a weird time. Let me go back. Let me look at the dates. Yes. The second one was the Sunday night debate. I believe that was the one that was happened as the Billy Bush tapes were kind of breaking news too. But there was football. There was competition for that one. There wasn't really for the other ones. The other ones fell on a Monday and a Wednesday. And so, yeah, it is what it is. As far as television ratings or interest, again, these are, that number John gave, the 47.6, is a combined number. Major broadcasters that carried those debates included, of course, ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, also Telemundo and Univision, PBS. And then when you get into the cable news, CNN, Fox Business, CNBC, Fox News, and MSNBC all carried those debates. So that's a combined number, not a breakdown of them individually. And it's about 56.37 million adults that watched the first debate. It is the most watched debate in television history. It is not the highest rated. I know when it happened, there was a lot of coverage. Oh, it's the most watched ever. Yes, it was the most watched, but we have a much larger population than we have. The highest rated debate in kind of modern times, once you get off of Kennedy, Nixon, the highest rated debate is 1980, Reagan, Carter 1. But it had this one had about 250,000 more viewers. But again, the population is much larger now than it was in 1980.
Yeah. Well, once you gave me these numbers, I did a quick hit onto Wikipedia to get the popular vote for the various people that ran to get a total of how many people voted. And I wound up with 135,773,479. I'm not going to say that's exactly right, but it's close enough to give us a sense of what percentage of the voters could have been watching some of these debates. And for the first debate, we wound up with 41.52% of the people that voted could possibly have won, or watched, I mean, based on the number of viewers and millions that all this equates to. And then the second debate, it was under a third with 32.39%. Now, obviously not everybody's got the time to watch all the debates, or the interest, or the stamina, or the stomach, or whatever. And a lot of this people got potentially second, third hand from either news outlets, water cooler talk at the office, that kind of stuff. But I also found it interesting, though, that when you provided that election night stuff, and the total viewership you said was around, what, 71.47 million viewers, that's 52.46% or so of the people that were that voted.
Yeah, 71.47 million people tuned in to one of the major networks or one of the big cable networks at some point during that evening.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of people, hey, they were lucky to get out and go vote. They don't have time to go watch the stuff. They'll check it the next morning and see what happened. But to me, it's interesting to see kind of what level of engagement a presidential election has these days. And this may not have been the best one to use as a barometer because it was virtually impossible to escape, you know, if you watch any television. Because there was coverage on the late night shows. There was coverage, obviously, on the news. It's just, it was inescapable.
By television ratings, it was one of the most, how do I want to put this? It was an election that the populace as a whole was more interested in than just about any other in recent memory. Again, you really have to go back to 1980 to get anything close to it. Mm-hmm. Clearly the nation was enthralled by the election. The election night coverage, though, actually was slightly lower in total viewers than 8 years ago. More people tuned in to watch Barack Obama give his acceptance speech at the park there in Chicago in 2008 than tuned in to watch a quasi-concession speech that ended up being, we'll talk to you tomorrow, and an acceptance speech that was like, well, thank you for your support, and we'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
I think that hurt the overall. If the two candidates had actually spoken that night, that number might have been higher.
Well, and I recall Barack Obama's first acceptance speech, and it was a good speech. I mean, whether you agree with him politically or not, the man is a very good public speaker and knew how to take that momentum of winning the election and the platform it gave him that evening. And I felt that was something that this time around, yeah, just didn't happen on either side. I mean, even having lost the election, you've still got that podium that evening to give a really good moving concession speech that you can then use to move forward some sort of agenda or, you know, whatever, or at least end the campaign on a nice clean note. And it was an odd night for television.
And again, it was an odd election. Secretary Clinton gave her concession speech approximately at noon Eastern the next morning. It was a fine speech. As concession speeches go, I guess it's one of the more memorable ones, seeing as I can't remember any others. but again, in 4 years, maybe I won't remember this one either.
Yeah.
President-elect Trump has done something I've never seen before, essentially continued to campaign, holding what he's calling thank you rallies, essentially large campaign style events in some of the battleground states that he won. And those have been going on the last couple of weeks. Not like anything I think we've ever seen before, kind of from either side.
Yeah, it made for interesting ripples both that evening and, like you said, afterwards with the almost the victory tour he's taken, but then also both leading up and since, all of the coverage of the appointments, the picks, the decisions, the comments, the scandals on both sides and stuff before and after. It's something that's really permeated the culture at well, as a presidential election probably should, but I don't know that it did it in the way and for the reasons in it should have. But it was something I definitely wanted to see, kind of how influential it was for the different networks and just overall and stuff like that. And it's interesting.
And I do want to make a couple of caveats. On the debates, they were also carried by several streaming services. Twitter and YouTube come to mind. There might have been others. Those numbers are not included here.
Okay, interesting. I was going to ask about that, but forgot to, because I watched the PBS coverage on YouTube.
Yeah. So again, those numbers are not covered here. The other thing that's interesting is, as John and I, why we don't really discuss it, NFL football is still kind of the monster in the room when it comes to television ratings. They were down fairly significantly before the election, and there were lots of theories as to why that was. One of them was, oh, people are just more interested in the election. There was theories about people were upset about Colin Kaepernick and some of his statements and his protests. And there was all kinds of weird theories. What we have seen is NFL ratings, particularly in prime time, namely on Sunday night, have returned and are actually stronger than last year since the election. Thursday night and Monday night are still having problems. They're better than they were before the election, but they're not up. And a lot of the argument from other insiders is there's essentially a very limited number of teams that the country as a whole is interested in. And there's only a limited number of good teams, and many of them just weren't scheduled for those primetime games. One of the things that has helped the ratings since the election, NBC has figured this out, and Sunday Night Football seems to feature the Dallas Cowboys, who are overall the most popular team rating-wise nationally, and B, they're also one of the better teams in the league this year. So yeah, in the last 4 weeks, they will play, I think, Sunday night, Monday night, Sunday night, and there is no primetime game the last week. So yeah, NBC kind of decided, okay, we're going to fix this. And the way we're going to fix this is we're going to just show the most popular team every week we can.
Why weren't they doing that before?
Because it upsets the league. There is a set schedule.
Fair enough.
In theory, the league tries to give them the better games. Some of the teams people thought were going to be good ended up not being that good. There's a whole host of reasons.
Well, every team has fans, and you don't want to annoy certain fan bases of just, well, we're not going to cover that team. They suck. That's not the right thing to do either.
Yeah. But overall, and I know many fans of the not Dallas Cowboys will hate this, and I'm not a Cowboys fan myself. I'm a Raider fan. We're also having a great year. But yes, for television executives, there is nothing better for you than to be able to say you have the Dallas Cowboys game on. It will help you.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And there's about three teams that that's true of. Pittsburgh Steelers fall into that category. Most of the teams in the NFC East, actually. The fact that they're playing the Cowboys half the time helps them. But Philadelphia, Washington, the Green Bay Packers are another one. There are teams that clearly are better to carry for a network than others.
Well, it makes sense. They've got a bigger fan base or a more loyal fan base or whatever.
Yeah, or a more spread out fan base.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously Green Bay is not that big, but there's Packer fans throughout the country.
Yeah, cool.
Now you want to move on to what we actually mainly talk about, which is the scripted broadcast network ratings.
Yeah, let's dive into that.
Just so we have an idea of what we're talking about, on average for scripted ratings, NBC is actually leading the pack, averaging about a 1.5 rating for primetime scripted shows. ABC is in third place. I should have sorted this better. CBS is in second with a 1.41. ABC, 1.30. Fox at a 1.26, which is ridiculously deceptive. Because they've got a couple of things way up at the top and a bunch of stuff way down at the bottom. And the CW at a 0.58 actually is pretty good for the CW.
Yeah, because that's still kind of in that baby network category, I would imagine.
Yeah, they are clearly miles behind. And if you notice, one of the things that kind of indicates they're a different network, at least, when I read off the list of channels that covered the debates and the presidential election, the CW was not one of them. They actually chose to run first-run programming or reruns those nights as opposed to election coverage.
Well, they don't have any real news infrastructure at all, do they?
Not that I'm aware of. Yeah. In theory, they could borrow from CBS or Time Warner's news agency, Time Magazine.
Or the other thing that would have been hilarious for them to do would be to take the stars of their show, fly them to a centralized location to watch the debate and comment on it.
Well, for the stars of their shows, that's simple. They'd just be in downtown Vancouver.
True.
They wouldn't have to fly anybody.
But you know what I mean. Get Stephen Amell, from Arrow and the different people from the different shows and stuff. And just what do they think of it? It would serve to market their shows and to cover the debate. But I'm frankly glad they didn't. Shall we start going through the different networks?
Absolutely. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's just go in alphabetical order. That's as good a plan as any. So let's start with ABC.
All right. What do you want to talk about? Nothing. Well, let me sort this. ABC. ABC's interesting. How to Get Away with Murder is not doing as well as it has been in the past. Still doing very well. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But not nearly as good as it has at some days. ABC's really come back strong with their comedy department, which started a few years ago. Modern Family is their highest rated show in its eighth season, averaging a 2.28 rating. The Goldbergs, Speechless, Blackish, The American Housewife, The Middle, Fresh Off the Boat, all doing really, really well. I don't know. You have anything in there that seems interesting?
Well, sorting this just by the rating and stuff, most of the comedies are on top. Most of the dramas are down below. It's not, 100% that way. But there's really not a whole lot from ABC I'm watching at this point. I watch Once Upon a Time, but I haven't even started the season. I've been letting it stockpile because it marathons well. Likewise, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I haven't started this season. And I did watch, I think, the first episode of Conviction. And it was just another legal drama.
Yeah, Conviction and Notorious are the two shows that at this point I would call canceled. There is no plans for future episodes. We can get into this. People always argue, no, there's no official announcement. Other than very successful shows announcing they're coming to an end for other reasons, there's no such thing as a cancellation notice. Conviction and Notorious, while they were not pulled off the air per se, those were kind of the first two shows ABC canceled this season.
I'm a little surprised to see Quantico so far down on the list. It's third from the bottom. And I watched the first season. I thought it was good, but it left on a note where I didn't really feel like I had to watch the second season. And apparently a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah, Quantico and Secrets and Lies are two sophomore shows that both have issues. And I would not expect them to return. Anything is possible in the spring. The only reason I list them as having any chance is the fact they are sophomore shows. If these were first year shows, they'd be done already.
Mm-hmm.
As we saw, Notorious actually did a little better than those two shows. So as second year shows, there's always a let's try a little harder. Let's give it a little extra rope to see. Things certainly don't look good for either of those two.
Now, at a network like ABC, do they tend to have one person that heads up the comedy stuff and a different person that heads up the drama? Or is it one group that's kind of doing the overall, here's what we're going to go with?
There is a huge board at ABC, at all the major networks, there is a head of programming. And I'm trying to remember who it is. And there is obviously a head of development. That's right. Channing Dungey's the head of programming at ABC currently.
It's just seeming to me that they're having a lot more success on the comedy side. So if they've delegated that to a particular individual and somebody else for the drama, obviously the guy doing the comedy is doing better. That was just my line of thinking.
Yeah. And she's doing great. I think overall ABC is doing really well. I think Channing's doing a great job in that spot. But yeah, there are some dramas that aren't doing as well. Obviously, some of the ones we skipped. Grey's Anatomy is doing fine. Designated Survivor is doing pretty well. It has had a disturbing trend. It started off doing monster numbers and has come back to earth. And yeah, the last couple of weeks has kind of actually been on the wrong side of average.
Okay.
So, yeah, you've got that. Once Upon a Time, though, still doing just fine. How to Get Away with Murder, still doing just fine. So, yeah, but ABC has a long history, well, not a long history, has about a 25-year history of being very strong with their comedy department, which had fallen apart in the late 90s to mid-2000s, and they've rebuilt that.
It's funny because if I were to think back really long term as to what I associate with ABC, I would go back to, say, the dramas of like the late 80s or 70s or 80s or whatever, you know, the Love Boat, those sorts of things.
Yeah, Fantasy Island, Love Boat, those were all on ABC back. Yep, absolutely. But then if you remember the TGI Friday, the Full House, they had a real strength there.
They did, absolutely.
And they've rebuilt it. Obviously, Friday night television is not anywhere near what it was in those days. Overall, ABC, while there's a lot of questions, the fact that they will probably surpass CBS for the year, possibly, there's a bunch of weird ways to look at this. Fox will probably be number one. And it is not based on any of the strength of their scripted programming.
Mm-hmm.
They got Lightning in a Bottle with a Cubs World Series, which fascinated the entire nation.
Yeah.
It happens to be their turn to have the Super Bowl this year. Those kind of things are simply insurmountable for other networks. CBS and ABC are kind of in a fight for third. And I would argue ABC's probably going to finish fourth, actually, this season. But again, I don't think that falls on the scripted programming side as much as kind of external factors. And the other thing, ABC could combat some of this with sports because they own a ton of rights to major sporting events. But they have made the decision that the carriage fees they get for ESPN make more sense to leave those on ESPN.
Ah, okay.
For those of us that remember the old days, you know, Monday Night Football used to be on ABC. It's now on ESPN. And there's, you know, a lot of people have questioned some major sporting events. Why are they on this cable channel? Because they'll make more money getting cable companies to pay for the channel than they will by selling ads.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's unfortunate for sports fans, but hey, it's a revenue-based business for all this stuff. They don't show this stuff for free.
Exactly. So like I said, ABC will probably finish fourth this season. Les Moonves will go nuts if he finishes fourth over at CBS. But again, not much of that has to do with the program director and the programming. I think programming is really doing well over at ABC. For the comic book side specifically, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is questionable to mediocre at best. Their biggest concern at this point, I think Agent Carter has scared them from doing multiple Marvel shows.
Okay, interesting.
So we know that the Inhumans are coming.
Yeah.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would be an iffy pick anyways. I'd have it as likely renewed at this point. But like I said, it would be iffy, certainly borderline. Like I said, with what happened with Agent Carter, it would not surprise me if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. simply ends to be replaced by the Inhumans next season.
That's kind of my gut feeling, kind of regardless of the ratings. It just feels like if you're going to bring an Inhumans thing on and it's not a spinoff of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then just quietly, you know, ending Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and replacing it with Inhumans is the right move.
Well, and arguably it is a spinoff. I mean, we've learned a lot about the Inhumans and the Mist and all that stuff on that show.
True, but my understanding is it's going to focus on the royal family, not any of the Inhumans we've seen so far in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I do believe that is correct, yes.
So it would be disconnected, and if you run both, there's going to be a little bit of an expectation of some sort of crossover continuity or touch point between the shows, but yeah. And it's at the point where they can gracefully kind of end it and start something new with a new cast, which presumably would be a little bit cheaper than hanging on to the people they've had for the last couple of years.
Also true. Another interesting thing about that, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., for those watching it and remembering, or, you know, even DVRing it and paying attention to that, it was pulled off the air for most of November to be replaced by specials and things. Remember, November is one of those key rating sweeps month. The fact that ABC wanted it off the air for that month and is showing new content here in December indicates they don't have a ton of faith in it either.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Like I said, I haven't started the season. What I've watched overall has been good from the previous seasons, but not, oh my God, they've got to keep it going. Great.
You know absolutely. What I mean? Anything else you want to move on to CBS?
Let's head over to CBS. Now, there are a couple of things here that I've watched in the past but have fallen off the wagon, specifically Hawaii Five-O and Elementary. A couple of things here that I watched, but if I miss, it's not that big of a deal, like Scorpion. That one is, frankly, we've talked about this before. It's a little bit of a train wreck from what it could be. I watched the pilot for Pure Genius. I like the concept, but I don't need to watch a medical show. But the two shows I have been watching and enjoying, MacGyver, it's not the old show, but it's good. And Bull, I've really been enjoying that. I thought that was a really good concept and good execution. Many of these other shows, again, you sort this, by average rating top to bottom, and a lot of the comedies are on top, a lot of the dramas are on bottom. And that may just be the mood the country's in these days. There may be more of a demand for comedy.
Yeah. Starting at the very top, of course, Big Bang Theory, which, let me double check, might be the highest rated scripted show on television this year, and it is. Big Bang Theory, it was renewed a couple of years ago through season 10, which is its current season. Which means whether or not it continues is completely up to the cast and crew. CBS would be happy to have it back. However, after 10 years, some of the cast and crew may be done.
What percentage of the cast, obviously the ones who play Penny, Leonard, and Sheldon, if any one of those three leave, I think the show's over.
Yes, and they've... It really is an ensemble cast. You may be able to lose, I think the four main men and Penny are vital. Melissa Routh and Mayim Bialik, probably the show could survive without. However, because it is such an ensemble cast, and even as you pointed out, there's not one key person. There's at least three key people.
Mm-hmm.
And when they negotiated to get to this 10th season, they signed a 2 or 3 year deal a couple of years back. They really fought together and banded together and stuck together.
Good.
So if that were to continue, again, like I said, Melissa Rouse's character and Mayim Bialik's character are the two that arguably could be replaced, but I'm not sure any of the four men or Kaylee could be replaced in any way that would keep the show going the way it's been going.
Well, and any departure of a cast member changes the dynamic of the show, and I think they've got a strong enough writing team that they could probably recoup from it better than most shows could, but it would change the chemistry of it. And it's working, obviously, really well as the highest-rated show on average, so why mess with something that's not broken? And, you know, a 10-year run... you know, if they want to keep going, that's great. If they're tired of having done this for a decade, that's understandable, too. But it'll be interesting to see if the cast wants to keep going with it for a bit longer, and if so, how much longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only is it the highest-rated show on broadcast television, it's the highest-rated show in syndicated television. Reruns of The Big Bang Theory, particularly on TBS and some of the other cable and local affiliates that air those, also do really well with those reruns. The show is just continuing to make a huge profit. And so, obviously, they will keep it going as long as they can.
Yeah. No, it just makes sense.
Nothing overly interesting here. The show that I would argue, or Pure Geniuses, was essentially canceled. Again, that was a show they didn't make more. They're not picking up more. They don't have plans for it. Pure Geniuses is the one show that kind of outright failed. MacGyver doing very well, particularly on Friday nights. It's doing just fine. MacGyver will stick around. Other new shows, Man with a Plan, The Great Indoors, Bull, and Kevin Can Wait, all doing very well. A couple of those comedies, Kevin Can Wait and The Great Indoors, depending on whether or not The Big Bang Theory lasts and who gets the time slot after it, will have some impact on how those shows do. However, Kevin Can Wait got the advantage of The Big Bang Theory lead-in for the first part of the season when it debuted, when it was on Monday nights, because they had football on Thursday nights. However, it's continued to do well after losing The Big Bang Theory lead-in. So that's a good sign for that show.
I think I watched at least part of the pilot for The Great Indoors. I don't know if I made it all the way through or not. It did not strike me as long-term potential, but I'm also not a big sitcom fan, so...
It's got some big-name stars. That's its biggest thing. I didn't think it was particularly great either. I watched an episode or two, but yeah.
Whereas, again, Bull doing as well as it does not surprise me. I mean, it's second-best drama they've got.
And that did it in an interesting way. It stayed steady and moved up this list. Bull started out fine with its first episode and then kind of dropped quickly. And after three or four episodes, I thought it was in a lot of trouble. And then everything else fell around it and continued to slide, and it stayed right where it was and just kept rising up the ratings chart. So yeah, Bull kind of had an interesting dynamic where, you know, kind of in comic terms, it had that traditional huge, if not slightly larger than normal, you know, second and third episode drop. Mm-hmm. But once it hit that fourth, fifth, it just stuck right there. And as everything else kind of slowly started to fade a little bit week after week, it didn't.
It was a well-conceived show. I mean, it's basically around trial consultants. So it's a different spin on a lawyer show, but not a radically different spin. And all of the characters they have a very clear purpose on the show. So it's not like they had too many characters and couldn't figure out what to do with so-and-so and they just kind of vanish or something. It kind of started fully formed. And the characters are interesting enough and have enough kind of interaction to carry you from episode to episode, but the each episode has its, you know, trial plot, beginning, middle, and end and stuff. So it's something I could definitely see being on around for quite some time.
And seeing as how it wasn't truly a spinoff, or actually wasn't a spinoff of any kind, the fact that it managed to hurt NCIS so little is also semi-surprising. Mm-hmm. We talked about replacing cast members. Apparently, as long as you keep Mark Harmon happy, that show can keep going forever because his supporting cast seems rather irrelevant. At this point, I think he's gone through most of them twice.
Wow. I hadn't realized it was that much. I knew Michael Weatherly left for Bull. The guy who plays Jack Dalton on MacGyver, what show did he come from? Was that NCIS also?
I don't know. But remember, when the show started, it had Michael Weatherly and the woman who ended up on Rizzoli and Isles, and I'm not thinking of the actress's name currently.
Angie Harmon?
No, the other one.
Sasha Alexander.
Yes, that was the original pair. And then Sasha left, and they replaced her with the Brazilian that played the Israeli, Cote Pavla, I believe her name is, or something like that. The Ziva character.
Okay.
Replaced Kate. And like I said, Ducky's retired. You know, I believe that man is almost 90, so he deserves a break. Mm. So yeah, it is a show that has gone through quite a cast. David McCollum is technically still there, but I believe he's about done. Sean Murray got added slowly. The directors changed a couple of times. Rocky Carroll's been there quite a while at this point, but again, was not the original. So yeah,
if you've got a writing team that can gracefully swap out characters and rotate the cast over the years, that gives you a definite edge on longevity, versus getting to the point, like, say, the Big Bang Theory is, if any one of a handful of those key actors were to wake up and say, you know what, I'm done with this, the show ends. Yeah. Whereas, again, most other shows, you've always got one person that's kind of that way, that's the title character, either literally or de facto, but then a lot of the others, supporting cast, you know, if you've got a writing team that can gracefully replace them and figure out what purpose in the story they served, because some writing teams, frankly, just can't do that well. It's clearly they're writing somebody else, but they're channeling the voice of the character they're replacing. They're not their own character.
And like I said, I think Mark Harmon is the person they couldn't do the show without.
No, I would agree. Replacing him would be challenging.
Particularly now that Weatherly's gone. If they were going to do it, that was the guy who could do it. I don't think Sean Murphy or Murray could do it now. He's not, like I said, if there was a chance, it would have been Michael Weatherly would have been the guy to replace him with.
Yeah. Well, and again, moving to Bull, I think, was a good move for the actor, a good move for the network. So I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah. Elementary is the lowest rated show by a mile on CBS. Probably won't be back. It's had its 5 seasons, done well. Like I said, Pure Geniuses was essentially already canceled. Madam Secretary, it's in its 3rd season. They're going to get it to a 4th season regardless, even though not doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
The Odd Couple, while it is in a 3rd season, they've been 2 short seasons. It's been a mid-season replacement a couple times, so it probably won't return. And the one that I have wondered about for quite a while, a sophomore show that's done well, but essentially is being squeezed out by just a ton of shows that won't end, is Code Black, which is a medical drama. I actually know one of their production people very well, and unfortunately I don't think that show is long for this world, but again, CBS, it's hard to, you know, NCIS in its 14th season, Criminal Minds in its 12th season, NCIS Los Angeles in its 8th season, it's hard to, you know, Hawaii 5-0 and Blue Bloods are at 7. You can't just be average when you're looking at that, because if you're average and that's what they've already got and those shows are also average, they're going to keep them around just because they've got a more proven track record.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just a matter of balancing your lineup on the show. And when you've got shows that have gone for a number of seasons, they've both proven their track record, but also, do you want to keep going? Does it get more expensive over time?
Absolutely. And all of those things are considerations. But once you've already got syndication deals and stuff and you've got essentially a second stream of income, producing more becomes much cheaper than producing more of a show that isn't at that point yet.
True. True.
Let's move on to the one we'll probably discuss the most, which is the CW.
Okay. I'm obviously watching about half their shows. Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, the DC lineup. I'm loving that stuff. It seems to be doing really well for them too. That's their top 4 shows.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is their strength. And as the 4-part crossover a couple of weeks ago now proved, it really is their strength. That crossover did spectacularly, raising the ratings of all of those shows. Significantly.
Now, I got 2 questions here looking at those 4 shows. Sure. First off, you put Supergirl at season 1. Now, technically, it's the first season on CW. You're not counting the CBS?
Not for comparison and ratings purposes, no.
Okay.
It's just playing in a different game.
Fair enough. That makes sense. Because, yeah, I mean, CW is not CBS.
Exactly. However, next year will be the season that gets it near 60 episodes. So then syndication does become a possibility already at that point. So in that way, it's a second year show.
Interesting. Okay. And then I was hearing rumors that this could be Arrow's last season.
I am not aware of that. It's entirely possible. Again, that would be on the cast and crew. The network would absolutely have no reason to want to get rid of that show.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I think if they can keep it, they should. It comes down to, did the show have a 5-year plan and that's it? Or, you know, does Stephen Amell want to go do other stuff or whatever? If they can keep it going, like I said, it's fun and they should. If they do, whenever they do end it, and at some point they will, I do hope that the actors from these shows are willing to come back as guest stars on the other shows in universe over the years after that. It just seems like it'd be fun for them to do a crossover a couple of years down the line, say after Arrow's end, and when all looks lost, in comes Arrow to come save the day or something.
Yep. And then you've got the shows on the other end. No Tomorrow and Frequency were really the two new shows, true season one shows they tried out. My guess is neither one will be back. They're essentially done. They are not on the spring schedule. But if you remember, the CW a year ago renewed everything kind of unilaterally about this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Which gave them, there are shows that are produced that they still don't have a time slot for. So something's got to go. My guess is both No Tomorrow and Frequency are gone. They've, I believe, have one episode remaining each, to air, and those will be done. Vampire Diaries, we already know, is in its final season, so it's canceled. Jane the Virgin is in its third year. It's also the highest rated CBS produced show. It will certainly be back, which leaves us to Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is the worst rated show. Still has not gotten to the mythical 0.0 yet that I'm still hoping for one of these days. It's gotten close a few times, but not there yet. However, again, half this network is CBS's. At some point, the show might survive purely based on the fact that CBS is not going to allow Warner Brothers to have everything.
No, that makes sense. But it also incentivizes CBS to come up with something else to put over there that may do better.
That is true. However, CBS has its own problems, particularly on the comedy side. There aren't many CBS-produced shows on CBS that are doing particularly well either, particularly on the comedy side. So, CBS. And again, you got a show like Code Black. I guess there's a possibility they could move it to the CW, but I'm not sure they would.
Doesn't feel like it'd be the right fit. This seems to be more the superhero, supernatural, you know, kind of sci-fi-ish, geekish kind of a network almost, which in and of itself makes Crazy Ex-Girlfriend a little bit of an odd fit in and of itself.
You know, and that's an odd fit anywheres. That is just an odd show. It's unique. It's different. I'm not saying that is a bad thing, but it is truly different than anything else on any of these networks. It is a truly unique show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not it's found a large enough audience is still a question.
Aside from the fact of the Warner Brother CBS politics on what could get added to this or not, you mentioned they've got a few shows waiting in the wings. Do you think there's a likelihood of another DC kind of a show coming in? Or, I mean, have you heard rumor of things waiting to fill in if Arrow were to leave or something?
Remember, the third season of iZombie is one of those things waiting in the wings.
Oh, good point.
Which has been produced and still doesn't have an air date or a time slot.
Fair enough.
The simple answer is yes. the slightly more complex answer is, again, they've got a log jam over there. They've also got the Archie.
Oh, right. Riverdale coming up. Yeah.
Which we will get here in the spring.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Not DC, but certainly comic book related.
Yeah, I'm curious if Riverdale is going to work or not. Kind of mishmashing Archie and Twin Peaks or whatever seems like a odd fit. But if it's good, it's good.
Yeah. To me, the closest thing I get from the trailers, the clips, the things I've read about it, Veronica Mars feels like the closest thing to it that we've kind of ever seen.
Interesting. Okay. If they can capture that kind of a vibe to it, I could see that working.
Yeah.
Huh.
So we will see. But again, the DC shows are all doing just peachy. They're fine. Supernatural in its 12th season continues to roll along as well. And then you've got CBS trying to find something to go with all that.
How is Legends of Tomorrow doing compared to last season?
on average, not on average, if you look at it episode by episode, it's down, but that's not unusual. So is pretty much everything else we're talking about. Television ratings are down season over season since the mid-80s, or actually somewhere between the late 70s and the early 80s. That's not news. There's just more channels out there. Mm-hmm. You can't keep the same percentage and have 500 channels as you did when there were three.
Right.
But until the crossover, its average would have been a little lower than expected compared to last year.
All right.
The crossover helped it. They added a pretty big name to the regular cast there.
Yeah.
In Nick Sano. So I don't anticipate that show going anywhere anytime soon.
I was more asking because I think it's the show that had the most significant retooling between seasons. They changed the mission, sort of. They added a number of cast members, got rid of one or two from last season. So its dynamic, I felt, had changed quite a bit from the second season compared to the first.
Yeah, I've watched the first few. I'm not completely caught up. I probably watched half of the eight. It's doing well. I finally caught up to the end of last season of Arrow, actually last night as we record this. I'm very interested to see where Arrow goes this season.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, actually, the next few days, I will probably try to get caught up on Arrow.
Cool. Hope you enjoy it.
Interesting. You say maybe they had a 5-year plan. Having just watched 4 seasons in a relatively short period of time, it seems like they had a bunch of 1-year plans.
The fact that they were doing flashbacks from 5 years ago for the whole run gives me a bit of a 5-year plan. But definitely, I think it's had very strong single-year plans to the point that you can usually string almost all of the B-plot on the island or flashback sequences together and get a mini-movie out of that that makes coherent sense in the order it aired.
I agree. I think they've also slowed that down.
Yes.
The first season, I think, was a year for Ollie on the island. The second season may have been a year, but I don't think it was a full year on the island. And the third and fourth season, I don't think he was in Hong Kong for anywhere near a year. And I certainly don't think the fourth season, when he went back to the island under Amanda Waller's watch, I think that was a month or two at most.
It was a month or two at most, but it covered that year for him. And I think when we pick up the next time, it's as if it's a number of months later.
Yeah. And again, we can see, but they've got it out there in the 5 years if they want to.
Yeah. It's just a question of, do they hit the problem Lost had of, okay, now what, when they kind of run out of flashback material?
Yeah. Well, we've still got to get him back on that island.
Yeah. Well, they've done that half a dozen times already, so I don't think that's
a problem.
That
is true. That is true.
You know, it's a fun show. The writing is good. The actors are good. Between these shows, they're showing more of the DC characters than I ever would have expected, and a couple I never would have expected to see live-action versions of. So I think they're doing a great job, and I hope they can keep it up.
Yeah. Vixen, for instance, I am surprised how much she showed up in several of the shows.
Yeah.
Talk about a character I did not expect to see, let alone being, you know, so important to multiple shows.
Vixen seemed like an obvious choice compared to, say, Wild Dog.
Okay, that is true.
So, I mean, there's obscure and there's really obscure. But they're doing a good job with them, so, you know, hey, the more the merrier. They pulled in one or two other characters for an episode or two. It's like, that's nice. It's a different take on the character, different take than we'd seen before on television, but a very accurate take to the character and well-used. So it was fun.
Absolutely. Interesting. And we'll see. Again, DC is doing just fine over there. That universe is working well. And I think your question about, do they have more? I think they could easily make more or spin some characters out or do all kinds of interesting things. I'm just not sure they've got the room to put those shows.
Yeah, and I don't think they need more than 4 on the air at any one time. I just hope that if Arrow were to end, that they've got some idea of a organic replacement to put in its place.
Well, and then the question becomes, as I know you've said, and many people have noted, Arrow's arguably the best Batman show that's been produced in decades.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if some of the odd changes in names and characters have something to do with them not having access to certain characters because of Batman?
How so?
Why Nyssa instead of Talia?
I think because they did. Talia does get mentioned.
Sort of.
I think that's a fair question. How far can they go in certain areas without really stepping too hard on Batman or in some cases even Teen Titans type jurisdiction, if you will?
Yeah. And remember, Talia, at the time Arrow started, Talia was essentially the big bad of a Batman film that was, you know, topping the box office.
Yeah.
When we learned who Felicity's father was, that cuts out that, you know, who that person's daughter normally is, you would assume.
No. I think she is the... The Felicity Smoke character is actually from the comics, but that was something that was... She was not even such an obscure... She was a supporting cast member. I hadn't even realized she was in the comics until I did a little research. And I'd read the comics. But I think they're doing a different take on Felicity, and the way she's acting and the role she's playing is more akin to her father's daughter in the comics, if you will. I don't want to give too much away for people who may not have seen that stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to do the same thing. So now I understand.
They're playing as true to they can to the comics with the limitations of Gotham having been licensed over at Fox, not wanting to step on the toes of the movie stuff and doing their own thing. So there are a few things here and there that they do different takes on than we might have expected, but nothing that feels particularly overly awkward.
No, I agree. Nothing that feels awkward. But if you're really steeped in kind of DC continuity and particularly Gotham and Batman family stuff, there's some questions where you go, oh, it could have been this, but oh, they might not have access to that name because of either the movies or Gotham TV show or whatever.
There are a couple of times of why did they go with that take on that character, yes.
Yeah.
But it's fun. They're doing a good job, so we'll see what happens.
And Flash is still the most popular. Are you semi-current on Flash? Because, to be fair, I'm 2 or 3 episodes back myself.
I am current on all of those DC shows.
While Flash was far and away my favorite DC show until this point, this is getting a little old and weird, and it's lost some of its light that it had earlier, or am I the only one that thinks that?
The issue I'm having with Flash, while I enjoy it quite a bit, is its arc on a season-to-season basis is similar-ish enough. Villain of the week, okay, I get that. Superhero show, you're going to have that. But the big bad is almost always a super speedster of some sort, and it's like, really, come on? And I was afraid that the ramifications and fallout of the Flashpoint stuff would be kind of sort of like what they've done. And while I'm liking the show, I think it's the tone is a bit darker this season and not to its benefit.
Yeah.
And they've got some ways that they could easily lighten it up with Wally and a few other things that I hope they do as they come out of the winter hiatus. It's not a show that I want to be deep, dark, and broody.
And again, I have not been watching Arrow this season, and that's my kind of plan for the next few days. However, watching the first episode or two of The Flash this season, they made some statements that would have some major implications on the Arrow. Did they follow those up or not?
Yes.
Okay.
They clearly have the writers of the shows talking with each other. Okay. Almost to the point where it feels like maybe somebody from the writing team of Arrow flipped over to Flash, and maybe vice versa, in so much as Arrow has been a little bit lighter this season and Flash a little bit darker this season. But again,
according to the first episode of Flash, there's a, I don't want to say important character, but there's a major change to the history of someone on that show.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm curious to see if they stick with that in Arrow.
Give it time. Once you catch up.
Yep. Absolutely. We'll chat then.
All will be revealed. What I like about these shows is they don't leave tons of dangling plot lines where it's like, wait, you just never dealt with this. What the hell? You know, they've got the payoff, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, they absolutely. And the continuity seems really tight. And I'll tell you this, watching 4 seasons in a month, you really see how tight some of the continuity is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that.
You know, because a friend I'm watching it with didn't, you know, had been watching it regularly until about the middle of last season. So they just kind of started watching again, picked up with me at that point. And, it was a lot of, where'd that come from? Oh, it was in this episode. Like, okay, yeah, but that was 3.5 years ago, whereas I'm like, oh, yeah, it was a month ago. I remember it clearly.
This is part of why I watch these shows with my sister, because occasionally it's like, wait, should I recognize this person, this thing, this plot point? And sometimes it's like, yeah, it's from this or whatever. Other times we're both like, I think we should, but I don't know where from, you know? It's some of these things marathon better than maybe they do on a week-to-week basis, which is how we're watching them. But so far, most of the stuff on those shows on a week-to-week basis is very easy to follow, and I don't get lost. It's just occasionally we don't see a character for a little bit, or a plot point goes away for about a month or whatever, and it's like, okay, wait, let me remember. All right, got it. So.
Yep. Want to move on to Fox?
Yeah, let's do that.
Fox is being very foxy. I don't know how else to put that. Fox has a couple of huge hits, and a bunch of stuff trying to find its footing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very typical for Fox. We kind of say that, I think, every time we do one of these episodes, we say that. We'll make this easy. We'll start at the top. Empire, second highest rated show on television, highest rated drama on television. Still just a powerhouse in its third season and doing phenomenally well. The next one, if you sort by highest rating, you can skip. That was a show called Star that essentially will join Empire. You do have the ratings for a single episode on here, which did fine, but...
But one episode does not a season make.
Exactly. The Simpsons, season 28, again, that is a wonder of television. I have I have some explanation. Namely, the greatest thing that show has going for it is you can continue to draw characters the same age indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no one would be interested in a 32-year-old Bart, but he's still 10, so the show works.
Yeah, and, 28 seasons, they've renewed it for, two more? It will become the longest-running scripted show on television.
Traditionally scripted television. Vince McMahon over at WWE Entertainment would argue with you on that, but yes.
Fair enough. I was not counting the wrestling, I was not counting soaps, I think it beats out the Rifleman. For prime time, I guess, would be the
Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, sorry, that's what
it beats out the Rifleman as well, but Gunsmoke, yeah, it will pass Gunsmoke. What can you say about The Simpsons? It's still The Simpsons. Lethal Weapon, I got to admit, and we've talked about this, I was pleasantly overly surprised. I'm loving this show.
This, to me, was one of the best things this season, because I went into it thinking, okay, Damon Wayans, I don't really know that I think of him as the Danny Glover character. It's been 30 years since Lethal Weapon came out. It's not exactly a timely adaptation to television. And given the lackluster Rush Hour season last time, I did not go into this with really much in the way of expectations. And they quickly won me over with a really good cast, really good writing, some excellent action, particularly in the opening few episodes, a definite sense of humor, and the actor they've got playing Riggs sells that character really well. He's very charismatic. Damon Wayans is actually doing a phenomenal job as Murtaugh. So this is, if you like the original Lethal Weapon movie, this is a show worth watching.
Yeah, and Jordana Brewster coming in, I think, has done, while she's not a huge character, I think she's done a really good job. I'm surprised she kind of left, film to come do that role, but I think she's done very well.
I am wondering if next season they're going to introduce the Leo Getz character from the second movie and kind of use each movie as a rough game plan, if you will, for each season. Kind of where are the characters at? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. Like I said, Lethal Weapon, I was kind of in the same boat. I went, oh, great, this is going to be terrible. But it's been really, really good.
Yeah.
And they're being rewarded in the ratings. People obviously lots of people are enjoying this show.
Good.
Family Guy is kind of becoming Simpsons Jr. It just keeps chugging along, doing really well. Son of Zorn, a show I've watched the first one or two and found to be just completely ridiculous, but people are enjoying it. Fox seems to have found another animated show for Sunday night to go with The Simpsons and Family Guy that is found an audience.
Cool.
Bob's Burgers, I continue to think, is one of the best written shows on TV. It's hilarious. Again, it fits right into that Sunday night block.
Mm-hmm.
Gotham, and now we're getting into the comic book stuff. Gotham, I think the show's really good. There's a part of me that wishes they'd get off the almost these comic book arcs they're doing. I'm kind of sick of this season's kind of big bad. Arguably, I could say the same thing last season. I also think the show watches much better marathoning.
That's good to hear, because I stalled out about 5 episodes in on second season and just haven't gotten back to it yet. And it's I've got a low tolerance for gore, and you know, I'm just very squeamish, and it hit a couple of buttons with me early on that, and it was one of those of, we'll put this off for a little bit, and again, just haven't gotten back to it. I do intend to, but it's unsurprisingly a little bit of a dark show at times, thematically and stuff, but it's Gotham focusing on the villains. What should I have expected?
Yeah, it's, and again, it's really good. I like I said, I haven't cared for this year's kind of big bad. I never thought of that character as that powerful, but maybe that's because I never thought of him that way. But no, it's been great. I also think the addition, well, and now non-addition of Michael Chiklis to that cast was a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was perfect.
I've watched where he was introduced, maybe an episode after that, and he's definitely a comic book fan and stuff, and he was well used in what I had seen, so that made sense to bring him in.
Another DC show, Lucifer, again, for Fox, doing really well. It's in its second season. There will be a third, which means there will be a fourth. This is another show that this might be one of my favorite shows on television. I got a group of friends that enjoy watching it together, so we get together and watch it. And Lucifer's really, really good, and I know almost nothing about the comic book character.
I actually have not read this. It's based on a Vertigo title, and I don't do too much in Vertigo, but the commercials looked really good for this. I've still got the first season stacked up on my DVR to plow through when I get a chance. It's one that I want to watch.
Yeah, it's really good. The guy playing Lucifer, I think, is wonderful. He's got a really good supporting cast. And again, not only did I not read the original series, well, my wife has, I never read Sandman either. So I'm just not familiar with this character in the least.
Okay. But the show stands on its own, as it should, so that's good.
Absolutely. I love it. Last Man on Earth is going to hang around. Probably it's in its third season. Well, those are short seasons. It's not into syndication numbers yet. It's doing just well enough to survive, as our Brooklyn Nine-Nine and New Girl. Now some of the things Fox experimented with and probably failed on. Pitch was an interesting concept. I know at one point Drew contacted me and asked about it. I guess Drew really enjoys the show.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get a second season, but anything is possible. Rosewood was kind of the plan to replace Bones. They introduced it a year ago, in kind of a short season, and now they kind of gave it a full push this time. That probably won't work. The Exorcist on Friday night, again, was kind of a miniseries type show. They got the 10 episodes. It certainly didn't do well enough for them to try to figure out how to get a second season out of that.
Okay.
And Scream Queens, a show I can't figure out how it got to a second season, is Fox's worst rated show, and I cannot possibly imagine why or how they would do a third season at this point.
Fair enough.
I enjoyed the show. I loved the idea. But again, its numbers just aren't there.
Oddly enough, I haven't watched it.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, kind of what I figured for that in Exorcist. It's, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, comedy slasher doesn't seem like your kind of thing.
Absolutely not. But hey, if there's an audience for it, that's great. It just doesn't seem like there's much of an audience for it.
Yeah. And you want to move on to NBC?
Yeah. I'm watching a couple of things here. I am multiple seasons behind on Blacklist, so I suppose I shouldn't count that as something I'm actively watching. But I have been watching Timeless, and I've been enjoying that quite a bit. I think that's well done.
I like Timeless. I've been watching it. It's got some flaws, which time travel shows will inevitably have. But overall, I like Timeless a lot. It, unfortunately, might be the one show that NBC will not bring back.
We were kind of getting a little bit of that vibe in one of the recent episodes where it seemed like they had an opportunity to, if they wanted to, just end the show. But it was one of those to be continued sort of an episode. So I'm almost wondering if some writers are getting smart enough to have exit strategies at key points in their first season to where if the show doesn't continue, they can at least end it on a clean note and not, you know, alienate those viewers that invested that much time to just have it on a cliffhanger or something.
Yeah, there's a few shows over at NBC, most of which I would predict will return, that are in some weird spots. The Good Place, doing very well, but had a weird limited number miniseries type order. Again, though, it's doing well enough that I'm sure they will find a way to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we got to talk about their big hit. No doubt about it, the big hit over at NBC for new shows, This Is Us. Have you been watching this show?
I have not. It hit my radar because a couple of the actors sounded... it was one of the guys from Heroes. I forget who else was in it. It looked, from an actor perspective, interesting, but concept-wise, not enough to kind of get me to actually watch it with all the other shows I've got on the plate and on the backlist.
It's also where, what's his name from Castle ended up? Is it Huertas, I believe his name is?
Oh, John Huertas. Interesting.
Yes.
That may have been the other name that caught my eye, I think.
I think the show is unique. It's clearly, it's character driven. It's slice of life. It's family.
I think that's where it lost me. Slice of life. If I have a life, well, not much of a life, but I have a slice at least of one, then that's enough. It's just those kinds of shows, while they can be good, don't have enough of a hook to necessarily keep me interested enough. And again, there's so many other shows out there right now. And I'm sure that's what a lot of these things are struggling with. It's, you know, can they find the audience and can the audience find the time? Clearly with this, they did well.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that just sucks you in. The characters are all so likable and, you know, so I don't even know if likable is the right word because I'm not sure they're all likable. They're all relatable. And they all have their flaws, and their flaws are clearly on display. And, yeah, like I said, I enjoy the show. I am not current, I got to admit. We were current through about 3 or 4 episodes, and then we kind of went down the let's get caught up on Arrow rabbit hole, and I got a little behind.
Understandable.
The Chicago show's all doing well. Law and Order, SVU, Dick Wolf again, season 18, another show that seemingly will never end. And he's, again, replaced many of his main stars multiple times.
Any odds of another Law and Order coming out? Because there used to be multiple.
No, because he's moved over to the Chicago shows.
Ah.
Yes, we have Chicago Fire, PD, and Med, and I believe Law is coming.
Interesting. Okay, good. So, glad to see those shows are doing well.
Yeah. Nothing else really of note. NBC also obviously has football on Sunday nights, which is a huge thing for them. The Voice, still doing well, is down slightly year over year, but everything else is too. You know, between the surprise hit of This Is Us, the very steady Chicago shows, the constantness of a Law and Order show, football and The Voice, NBC is kind of rock solid and right where they want to be.
Cool. And if they want to keep going with Timeless, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I'm not sure it's going to happen. Blacklist in a fourth season, I can see bringing it back. It's clearly not, it's clearly doesn't have unbelievable ratings. It's not the huge hit it was its first season. Mm-hmm. But again, NBC's in a strong enough position that it doesn't need to turn things over quite as much. Blind Spot, a sophomore show that's in a similar position. I would predict it would return. But again, if it goes, it wouldn't be overly shocking.
Yeah, it really at that point would depend what do they have waiting in the wings to bring in and how do they think that would do compared to these two shows. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I mean, there's just a certain percentage where you've got to get rid of something. And in NBC's case, after Timeless, Blind Spot's probably the next most likely candidate.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. That covers the major networks. Anybody have any questions or anything? Of course, you can post on the forum. You have anything else, John?
No, those are the main things. Again, it's a pretty busy TV season for me, just with the number of shows that I'm enjoying and whatnot. It's hard to find the time to juggle them all. It's surprising how much of my shows are kind of off the main networks for the most part, because really there's only the Timeless show I'm watching on NBC and trying to stay current on. Everything on ABC I'm kind of stockpiling and marathoning with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Once Upon a Time. CBS, again, MacGyver, just out of more affection for the old show. This one's all right. It's not as good as the old one. But Bull, that's definitely I want to keep up on. But really, it's there's so much out there. And I'm glad to see a lot of the shows I like are doing well enough they're going to keep going. There's always going to be the one or two that, yeah, it just didn't catch on big time. But it's not like when we talked, I think it was last year, where there were already a couple of shows I was really enjoying, and it's like, yep, it's over at 9 episodes or something. You know,
yeah, Timeless is really the only one. And then, like I said, the two shows ABC kind of already canceled, but didn't sound like you were watching either of them.
So. No, like I said, started Conviction, didn't stick with it. So.
And Secrets and Lies, I completely missed, and it sounds like you might have as well.
My sister's watching that and likes aspects of it, but is also very, I think, frustrated with aspects of it, where it's basically if people would just tell people other things, certain things wouldn't have happened, but it's all the secrets and lies everybody has that's essentially progressing the plot. It's like, okay, interesting concept, but I could see where it, if you're not careful, it could get really contrived and... I think you've got to have writers that plan a couple of steps ahead to do that kind of a show, at least as my sister's explained it to me. And from what she's telling me, I'm not convinced they have writers that think enough steps ahead for it.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not watching the show.
Yeah. But again, for the fall season, I would argue This Is Us and Lethal Weapon are the two real big surprises.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Lethal Weapon is... been a very, very pleasant surprise. It's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that continuing for quite some time. And yeah. At some point, I'm going to sit with my sister and we're going to go back through the movies, do episodes on those, just because I think it'd be fun at the end of, say, the first season of Lethal Weapon. We do an episode on that and then we rewatch the movie and see kind of if it syncs up enough. So just be
it's
fun.
It's funny. I don't think of myself as young by any stretch of the imagination. Lethal Weapon... I remember seeing 2 and 3 in the theater being taken by my father. I was almost too young for the first Lethal Weapon. And I'm almost out of the ad demographic for television, which is one of the things that surprises me about how well it's doing. It clearly is its own thing, and is it just playing off the film? Because, again, the fans of that film are significantly older than...
Where I think they went right with this is it's like they'd watched the film... understood the film and rebuilt the film as a TV show while being faithful to it, but not slavishly faithful to it. And they understood the parts that worked. And if there were parts that didn't work, they just kind of gracefully ignored them or whatever. You know, they retweaked a couple of things, but it captured the spirit of it well. And again, they understood why it was entertaining, why it had so many spinoffs, and embraced what it was. And didn't try to say, well, if we did that kind of, you know, crazy cop today, this is what would happen. And try to go too uber realistic or anything like that. And again, finding the right actor, for Riggs that can do kind of the whimsical, crazy kind of a stuff, but also is one that you're really rooting for, and you can see the pain he's recently gone through. And I think starting the show with before his wife has died, seeing that happen and then kind of rolling forward a little bit, really set up and sold that aspect of the character very effectively. So it was, again, a well-conceived show, regardless of the fact it's based on a movie. And it's not like, hey, if you like the movie, you'll like this. We're just going to coast or do exactly what the movie did for the first thing and go from there, like Rush Hour did.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. They have done one thing that has annoyed me on that show. And I get it. It's, have you seen those spots? Have you noticed those spots that are quasi in-story product placement and quasi ads?
No.
They've been doing these spots with the medical examiner where they will come right essentially before a commercial break. Mm-hmm. And he'll be playing with his Microsoft Surface and mentioning something about the case they're working on. But at some point, it slides clearly just into a Microsoft Surface ad, and then the next regular commercial starts right out of it. Almost like it's a weird thing.
Huh. I'm not watching it with commercials. I'm glossing over those.
Well, so as am I. But the question is, where do you start fast forwarding? Because like I said, these usually fall right where a commercial break starts. And the first, you know, if it's a 30-second spot, the first 10 to 15 seconds feel like more show.
Got it. Yeah, yeah.
But by the last 15 seconds, it's clearly just an ad.
I'm surprised they're able to do that legally. And yeah.
Why would you question the legality of it?
Because it blurs the line of product placement and commercials and stuff. And I know for kids' shows, you can't do commercials for toys of the show during the show. And I wasn't sure if that was strictly a kids' show law or if there were other things that had a separation of kind of church and state between the content of the show and the commercials for the around the show or starring those people.
Yeah, and I know for an example, my TiVo does a thing where it kind of finds the commercials so you can just skip over them, literally a little sound or ding when, you know, mm-hmm. a commercial is started and you click it and it goes to when the show starts again. And it is clearly messing with that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Because it doesn't know how to deal with that.
Yeah. It's a fun show, though, and I've got a Surface, so if they want to sell me on that, I'm okay.
Actually, I bought a Surface fairly recently. It is a neat device, but, yeah, again, not an ad. We're turning into the same thing I was just complaining about.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, this is good stuff. Thank you again for doing all the number crunching and collating the data and stuff, also on the election. I really appreciate that. For me, these are, like I said, a lot of fun to do. It gives some insight into the business side of television, and while again, this isn't covering everybody who's watching everything or all the factors that lead to what shows continue or don't continue, it is one of the guiding forces behind that. And it's always kind of fun to get an idea of, well, you know, it's like, okay, I haven't watched Frequency. It's not looking long for this world. So maybe I wait. Maybe I then find out if it exited cleanly with an end of the story or just stopped. And that tells me if it's worth marathoning later or not. So,
well, and as long as we're on to that, we should mention the CW has signed a unique deal with Netflix. Starting next season, they will become the exclusive streaming home of CW shows.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, not only will they be available like they have been, essentially a season later, they will be up the next day as they come out.
Nice.
You know, for my brother, who's a cord cutter and has been following, like, the Arrow, you know, the DC shows, it became kind of a shock to him when I believe about the fourth, fifth episode of the season in, all of a sudden, all those shows disappeared from Hulu.
Yeah, there have been a couple of times where, you know, we don't watch it timely enough or the DVR missed it or whatever, and we're doing the TV on demand quite a bit, too. But it was one of those things I was noticing, like with Arrow, you'd have the last couple of episodes, but then it hits the hiatus and suddenly you're down to the last three or something. So there are times if you're not careful, you miss the opportunity to catch up on something.
Yeah, and like I said, Hulu users have lost CW shows. That happened late October, early November. But like I said, if you happen to be a Netflix subscriber as well, they will be day and date next year.
Yet another reason for comic book fans to keep Netflix. That, the Marvel shows, yeah.
Yep. So
good stuff.
Just kind of an interesting note to the business side.
Cool. So anything else? Or is that pretty much it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.